G'day, welcome to the OWN podcast, Outwear Mobile's podcast all about the mobile industry and mobile dev. And today is a very proud day. We're inducting a young developer by the name of Keith Smyth into the host's chair. Welcome, Keith. I don't want to speak too soon, though. For now, you're keeping the seat warm for Talbo.
Yes.
But if you play your cards right, that might be a permanent spot, all right?
And the seat is oddly warm, even though it's been a week.
Since Talbo last sat in it.
I don't know how he does it.
Yeah, so Talbo had a bit of a client meeting he had to attend, so he couldn't join us today. But we're welcoming Keith into the hosting roster.
Thank you.
You were on a couple of episodes ago, and you're an Android dev.
Episode 8.
Episode 8, wow.
Also known as the best episode.
Yeah, that's what we call it. Do you want to just tell people what you do as a dev here at Outwear?
Sure. I'm an Android developer, so that means I'm the only one in the room that can write Android apps.
Ooh.
I know. That's not true.
I'm here for balance.
that was the voice of Ankita Shiba, who is an iOS dev and also dabbles in Android. You worked on a little Android pet project a while back.
That's right.
you're a dev and a tech lead. Do you want to tell people what an iOS tech lead does?
We do all the magic creating iPhone and iPad apps and encouraging others to do so.
There is some hard work there. It's not all magic.
Yeah, that's behind the scenes. We should not talk about it. But right. My one day goes like starting with stand-ups, doing mm-hmm. tech huddles, having meetings and discussing the architecture of the project.
And just thinking about how great the iOS team lead is.
That
takes up a large part of the day.
I don't think about my team lead all the time.
Finally, rounding out our iOS-centric panel tonight, we have Jean-Étienne Barrault. Comment ça va, Jet?
Très bien, et toi?
Bah, pas mal. Et les autres? Ça va?
I'm so happy Jet spoke in French.
I'm done.
Jean-Étienne, or Jet, as you like to go by, you're joining us also to talk about iOS. You're also an iOS dev. Did Anki leave anything out? Is there anything else about iOS deving that here at Outwear?
Yeah, iOS dev is not only just writing code. Yeah.
It's about reading code too.
Reading code and
drawing
fixing bugs.
Code.
But no, more interestingly, it's here at where we use agile methodologies. And I think it's quite interesting to be more part of the process of mm-hmm. of picking up a story and knowing what you're good at, and sometimes have a chance to pick up something that you are not really good at, so you can skill up and learn something new.
And taking ownership of that feature, so it's not you're not sort of just in air quotes the dev, you're owning that feature, and you're sort of thinking about, well, how will this work best for the user, and
yeah.
what will be the nicest experience that I can build for them.
And yeah, when the features is shipped, you can be proud. You can see it on the screen, mm-hmm. and you're like, yeah, I did that. Also, the feedback that we can have with the designers and the product owners. And as a dev, you don't just write code. You can also say, no, I think that's not good.
There's a lot
of communication,
really
good, but we could do it better.
Yeah,
and, they listen to us. That's great.
Nicely said. So the reason we have three iOS reps today and only one poor little Android there in the green corner.
Hello.
after our very popular Android prediction show we had with Petzey and Keith a couple of weeks back.
Most popular.
The most popular. The bestest, as you've dubbed it. Apple's developer conference, WWDC, is coming up very soon. And before it happened, we wanted to have our chance to do the same for iOS, to talk about what we think they might be releasing. But, you know, let's keep people in suspense just a little longer. Before that, I want to have a bit of a chat about life living in Australia post-heartbleed.
Dun, dun, dun.
So dramatic. I think there's a lot of information out there about heartbleed. It's a vulnerability in OpenSSL. You can go fishing for 64 kilobyte chunks of memory.
So Heartbleed is a phishing problem.
Heartbleed is a phishing game. Yep. But more seriously, I want to talk about the fallout, the sort of, you know, the consequence of this. And that's, Jet, did you have to change your rsvp.com password as a result?
Not only RSVP, but Meetic and
eHarmony.
eHarmony, yeah, all of them.
Text and Flirt.
Oh, I didn't know that one.
Oh, that reminds me.
The whole suite. So yeah, we're talking about passwords. That's kind of, it seems like a very pertinent topic right now. And Jet, you've found a really nice website, howsecureismypassword.net. Do you want to tell us the URL for that?
Yeah, sure. I think you just did.
So, what's that website all about?
Basically, it just lets you type in a password, and it won't record it, supposedly.
Yes, yeah, so they say.
I was going to ask, sure. Are you actually worried that they're recording passwords?
Maybe they do. We don't know.
Secretly, one day, it will just say, your password is not secure because we have it.
Yes,
we have use with all caution. The passwords. More interestingly, what this website does is it tells you that whatever password you type in, maybe it's your password, maybe it's a very similar password. It tells you how long it would take to crack this password, according to like today's technology. Mm-hmm. And some passwords can be cracked like immediately or in an hour. Mm-hmm. And if you go with a very complicated password, it will tell you that maybe it takes like 10 decades or 12 centuries or a billion years.
There's that really good XKCD comic about it. It's like it shows a really short password that has lots of special characters, and it's like for a computer. Using special characters doesn't actually trick a computer. Like, as far as a computer is concerned, an exclamation point is not that different to a one.
It's just a
different
number.
It's not really that hard. But using a really long password, that's a way to get a secure password.
It's long password and mm-hmm. mixing different sets of like lowercase, uppercase.
French anyway. Words, English words, the usual, yeah.
But I think anyone can find their own pattern to find a good password. Mm-hmm. It's just that after Hardly, I got an email from my father. I think my father is a good example of the normals, like mm-hmm. the actual users of all the apps that we use.
The muggles.
What?
The muggles. I'm more carrying like, on the wizard analogy.
Yeah. Keep it up.
It's more like the people who don't really know about technology. Sorry, Dad, but you don't.
He won't hear this. He doesn't know how.
And just have to keep using their computers, their smartphones and everything. And he sent me an email like, oh, have you heard about Hubbleed? Mm-hmm. Yes, I did. And oh, what should I do? And I told him, like, you should consider that all your passwords are now
lost.
Yeah, lost. You should change all of them. And it's mm-hmm. it's really a pain. So, I thought that's interesting to see what we could do instead of having the basic pair of username and password, if there's something better. And all the rage is about...
sort of OAuth. So, basically, you use an identity that... you know, is your single identity on the internet, and Google and Facebook and Twitter, they all want to be the service that you consider is your sacred primary service.
I mean, I like it that a website does that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's really nice. Like when I go onto like Stack Overflow, mm-hmm. And you can just log in with your Gmail login, and it mm-hmm. just recognizes who you are. And it's a really nice feeling. You're like, oh, I don't need to remember another password.
Yeah. But Stack Overflow was developed by and for developers and we understand how to use it quickly, but how mm. many like mainstream websites use OpenID or maybe Facebook?
Almost none.
Yeah,
I think Facebook is the like the OpenID base, like yeah. that they want to be used as everyone else's.
Yeah,
ID.
But my dad doesn't have a Facebook account, for example, and my grandma doesn't have and she uses a computer, she uses a smartphone, and she doesn't have a Facebook account. Mm. And most websites just create the basic like username and password. They don't even hash the password.
They'll send it to you in an email. This was your password.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, thanks. Do you know what's really funny? Like I used to think that was a really convenient feature. I'm like, what is wrong with me? Like, how did I think that was
I always get such
behavior?
A fright. Like if I see my password in plain text, I'm like, ah, how did that get there?
Never use that website again.
But then again, then recently, a lot of major providers of OpenID or stuff like this started implementing two-factor authentication, where they send you an SMS to a trusted device. But actually, recently, I came across a very interesting article from fellow developers here in Melbourne, mm-hmm. Where he says that basically sending a confirmation code through an SMS is not any more secure than anything.
Is it? But is it a different kind of insecure? Like, I know, yeah, sure, let's say SMS is hackable, but you've got to be a hack, you know, you've got to be able to hack someone's server to get your password and log in.
Not even.
And be able to somehow hack your SMS?
If you're on a jailbroken device, maybe you can access SMS really easily. Mm-hmm. If you're on Android, you can access SMS.
For another user.
What?
For another user?
Like, no, if you install an app that mm-hmm. requires SMS access,
yep.
and then you receive an SMS activation code from your bank, for example, mm-hmm. and that app can totally see that SMS, and maybe they can share it to their server, and they know your activation okay. code.
So you're saying you shouldn't trust that an SMS on your phone is secure?
Yeah, and an SMS can sometimes be delayed by a few hours, or sometimes not even reach it. It's mm-hmm. it's based on telephony standards, mm-hmm. which are not so reliable. So, yeah, what else can we do? And that's a real question.
I think the obvious solution is Samsung's face unlock feature, which came out on their Galaxy phones. And Keith, I'm looking at you. Have you tried that out?
I have a Nexus 4, so I have the KitKat version of face unlock. And I thought I'd try it one day. And it works really quick. It unlocks really nice and fast, and you get to see your face, mm-hmm. which is not always nice. the developer in me wanted to break it, so I grabbed a photo of myself, and someone has just come to visit.
Paul Talbot, Mr. Podcast. Paul
Talbot. He looked really sad. So, I grabbed a photo of myself and I unlocked the phone with a photo of myself and I immediately turned it off.
That's very secure.
It's not secure at all. I mean, it was a good photo, but...
I was going to say something about a photo of Fozzie Bear, but I didn't want to.
I have a face for podcasting.
It's just furry, that's all.
I think they should come up with some retina scan or something instead of this face recognition.
Yeah. But would you want to hold your phone like up to your eyeball? Wouldn't that look really weird?
Yeah, but this is not secure. Mm-hmm. You should come up with like thumbprint or a retina scan or something like that.
Well, so I mean, yeah, that's the 5S has got the thumbprint. Does anyone have a 5S?
No
5S's. Yeah.
No.
Keith, do you have one?
Where's your 5S, buddy?
Actually, the guy that sits next to me has a 5S.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And do you see him using Touch ID?
He does.
Happily.
He's basically, the reviews I've been hearing of the thumbprint and 5S, mm-hmm. and this is weird coming from the Android guy, is, how do you call yourselves iOS devs, is like, you, at first you're like, why do I want to use this? This is so much weirder than just swiping to unlock. And you've like, you see the videos online where they swipe 4 or 5 different iPhones in a row and then hit the thumbprint iPhones and they stop because they have to wait for the thumbprint. But once you get used to it, you don't want to lose it. It's just that much easier
to your brain. Yeah. So it doesn't seem like a big deal.
When you compare it to the passcode, which is like almost a secure kind of thing. It's kind of the thumbprint is like, ooh, now I can buy something on the store and I just have to thumbprint it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's definitely a lot of convenience. Well, the other thing that Apple introduced was the iCloud keychain, which is the idea that if you're logged into your phone and your computer using your Apple ID or iCloud or whatever, buzz Apple marketing words, it will store your passwords and then like autofill them in for you. So it's basically similar to the 1Password and Passpack and all these third-party utilities that kind of let you, basically you have a wallet of passwords, and once you've opened that wallet or repository
with your 1Password
on your device with your 1Password, then all your passwords will be there. So I've got to admit, I'm dragging my feet on that front. I have a feeling that I should be using one of those services, but there's just kind of, to me, what if I use one of those services and they generate a whole lot of random passwords, mm-hmm. and then somehow that service goes badly?
That's the problem. It creates a single point of failure, mm-hmm. where if someone gains access to your wallet of passwords, mm-hmm. they can read all of your passwords.
But and the same time with the Samsung face thing, what if someone takes my face off and puts it on their own face?
I want to take his face.
You have to be realistic.
I think if that happens, your passwords are your second or third problem. Your first problem would be to get your face back.
I'm actually using Passpack. I made the jump a little while ago.
Yeah. How's it going? How's it working for you?
I do have that worry, that same worry that you have. Mm-hmm. Like, I've got a bunch of like 20-character-long randomly generated passwords. Mm-hmm. And while I feel super safe when I'm copying them and pasting them into my browser, I'm like, look how long this is. I don't even know my passwords. They're so secure. Uh-huh. It's just like you expect like one day the service might not be there and now I'm stuck. So it's kind of, you've always got that in the back of your head.
Like, I'm kept up at night because, every time one of these things comes along, I've got to change my passwords. So I'm like, okay, I've got that insecurity that my passwords at any day, they could be cracked. And then, you know, I've got to go through everywhere and update everything. But you've got the scare that all your passwords are too secure.
Yeah, like it's, I'm trusting this third party to secure my passwords and remember my passwords for me. And they could all go away.
You'll be entering a master password for saving all the other passwords, right?
Yes.
Is there any way, if you forget that master password, can you recover it?
I have no idea.
Most of the password managers don't provide that. So if you forget your master password, you'll have to go and reset all your accounts.
Actually, come to think of it, you are right. I use Passpack, and I believe, don't quote me on this, but they did say that if you lose your master password, it's gone. Like,
well, it's the same way if you forget any of your individual passwords.
Well,
most of them have like a secondary email address that you can, like, forgot your password, we'll email it.
Yeah. We'll SMS it to your phone. And then Jet will have it.
We'll send you a letter. So, I'm going to call out my mum a little bit here. I'm not going to give her address, so I feel like I'm not giving any risk of breaching her digital security. But my mum has an iPad, and she has the Notes app. And in the Notes app, she has a big note with all her passwords.
that's the top of security.
So, just as long as no one knows which iPad is my mum's, I think we're safe. There's enough iPads out in the world that they're not going to randomly steal hers. But
does the Notes app sync to the cloud?
Yes, it does.
Sorry, the iCloud?
It probably does. I dare say it sort of does. I feel actually like a bad son now for having mentioned that. So
my mum has an iPad as well.
Maybe tonight I'll give my mum a call and
sorry,
give her some advice. So passwords. Change them, please, people. Be good password citizens. So, going back to the thumbprint on the iPhone 5S, that's something that is still, it's not in wide use. As in, when you're using your iPhone, you can only use it to unlock the device or buy something on the App Store. This is my smooth as butter segue here.
Every time you call out a segue, it gets less smooth.
It's less seggy. So iOS 8, Anki, do you reckon with iOS 8 coming out, they're going to open up that Touch ID? So basically, I'm using some third-party app and I want to log in. I don't have to enter a PIN. I just Touch ID it. What do you reckon are the chances?
I hope they do it, but I'm not sure because I have not heard any rumors and I cannot trust anything about it. So, I hope if they can make it open to the developers or like some third-party developers, it's very cool. Like, if we can do that kind of login to some of our apps, it will be easy for the user, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. They didn't have to.
Is there a problem, though, where... I don't know. I don't have a 5S, so I haven't had that training, but is there a risk that some people might keep touching the button instead of just scanning? So, they're using our third-party app, and we're like, oh, just scan your finger to log in. And they press the home button, they go home. And then they open the app again. Just touch your thumb to scan to log in. And they press the button and they go home again. Yeah, do you think there's a risk?
If you are reusing that thing for unlocking and logging and everything, there might be a problem.
Well, that's it. Because for Apple, that's always been, it's like the sacred home button.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe they've had a year now. So, maybe that's enough time to train the muggles or the Jet's dad or my mum how to use Touch ID. So I mean, I don't actually have a 5S, so I can't speak to that from a personal point of view, but I feel like if they were to open that up, it could make a lot of our work making PIN entry screens
<That's> true.
Redundant. And I for one would be very happy about that. So in similar APIs, Jet, what do you think is the chance of the Siri API becoming open to developers?
I think that's going to come someday because it can be very powerful. Like as a user, I use it sometimes while I'm riding my bike.
I'm always interested to see how people, because I feel like there are a lot of people use Siri in one particular way, and I've never thought of using it that way. So is it just while you're riding you want to switch songs or?
No, I don't listen to music while I'm riding. It's very dangerous.
Yes, sorry. Of course.
No, instead I do something way less dangerous. I write SMS while I'm writing.
I write songs while I'm riding. It's much better for you.
Songs about riding bikes.
So, no, you're back from work and you want to organize a party or you want to organize your night or whatever and you want to send a few SMS and you're on your bike. And instead of typing them with two hands, you just quickly...
Which would be hard, yeah.
Which would be...
Admittedly.
Yeah, that would be a bit harder. Instead, you just grab your phone and you say, Siri, send a text message to that person. And it's quite accurate, even with noise around you, with traffic and stuff. It's quite accurate, so it's quite good.
I don't mean this in an offensive way, but we talked about different accents and Siri struggling, like voice recognition in Slovenian is very hard. And when I often talk to Siri, I put on a fake American accent. You have a very, I'm not saying you have a strong accent in any way, but do you find, does that make a difference at all?
No, I think it's all right. It's true.
Do you put on a bit of an accent when you're talking to Siri?
I set Siri to be in Australian English.
Yeah.
And sometimes I try to take a very Australian accent.
Try to talk like Keith and I.
G'day.
Yeah, a bit like that, but I'm not too good at this. But, so sometimes a few words get misspelled, but it's quite accurate. Even
it's
if
good
you're not
enough
native,
that you
it's
can
really
send it,
good.
Yeah.
So, considering it's so good, I think they should open an API.
What do you think could be the integration, though?
I honestly, I don't know, because it's going to be really tricky. You can't expect your app, for example, to listen to one word, because maybe instead I don't know, a
Twitter, you said Twitter.
Or even if you say Twitter, or if you say short message service, or if you say something else, like if you want to say the timetable, you can say schedule, you can say schedule, you can say timetable, you can say time, you can say when is it coming, when is the train coming.
That's
you say the train, the metro, the tram, you can use so many words. So you can't say, like, I want every time the user asks for the train timetable, I want to open my app.
Yeah.
I don't know how they can do it. Maybe.
I think they've got to preface it with the app. So, you know, if someone wants to know the footy scores on AFL Live, it would have to be, like, very specifically AFL Live, and then that means Siri switch context. Now Siri knows that it's listening to the AFL Live grammar, and it would have to be, you know, what are the scores? And I also reckon it's going to have to focus on keywords, right?
Like, yeah, that's right.
Because as programmers, we can't. It'd be great to spend 6 months writing a dictionary of every possible conversation you could have with your phone about the footy.
Yeah, that'd be really fun. I'd love to do that.
It'd be a blast.
I think as developers, we can provide a set of keywords. Mm. If any of these things are being said, you open this particular segment.
Yep.
I think that's what I want. Like when you're riding, if you want to map your ride, you can just talk to Siri, open map my ride and start my navigation.
Yeah.
Or like in between, you can just ask how many kilometers have I covered or something, you know?
And the cool thing, I was fooling around with this the other day, like Siri does already open apps for you. So he/she, I know Siri is a male or female in different parts of the world. Siri, if you just say like Siri open insert app name, Siri can open that app.
Yeah.
So we already know that Siri can identify which app you're trying to talk about. So it doesn't seem like a giant leap to then, you know, append the next command as the deep link URL. That's essentially right. Of your app. So your app will get a notification, launch with URL, and instead of it that another app launched it, Siri launched it.
Yep.
Yeah, but I think the whole point of Siri is to not. What?
Yeah, go on.
I think the whole point of Siri is to simplify everyday's life, so you don't have to think which app you want to use to do something, and just to speak as you would speak to, almost as you would speak to a human. And if you have to think, okay, I will prefix my voice command with the name of the app.
It becomes unnatural.
It goes against this idea that you just talk to your computer and the computer will figure out. So if you have to think, it's basically going back to speaking with codes, code phrases and stuff.
And also you get to the point where you've got to, if you didn't do that, but you had keywords, so let's say there's a sentence that contained both AFL and scores, which means that the AFL Live gets it, then you're going to have this keyword squatting sort of movement where everyone's going to be like, my app that is just a thing that lets you view ads, it has all the good keywords. So if anyone mentions, you know, any of these 10,000 keywords, open my app. So yeah, it's actually a really hard problem.
Yeah, I don't think we will have access to the sentence level or the words.
Mm-hmm.
We'll just, like Siri, will extract the content and the actual question and I don't know, talk to the app in a way. Because if you say, give me the score, but maybe you will phrase it in a whole different way that has the same meaning, like how good that team performed.
Yeah.
You know, like, or is that team really bad this season or something like this? And that's not even speaking about scores. It's just good and bad, which are very generic.
So maybe it isn't actually a client issue. Maybe, like, because, you know, Siri already talks to some movie backends and some in the US, some sports and things like that. So basically they've created this API where Siri will directly pull data and show it to you. So maybe it's just a matter of Apple being more democratic and open about that. So it's just kind of going, if you want Siri to be able to pull data about your service, you know, here are the keywords that Siri will use to get to your service, and you provide us JSON data in this particular format or something like that.
So I've got to butt in with the Google.
Yeah, the Now
portion
the
now, of this. Yeah, Google Now.
Is Now open? It's
now.
Are we open now?
I should have checked that. It sounds like it's a problem that like Google kind of has semi-solved. Like you sort of, you'll say the keywords like something like an SMS or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the Android system will go, okay, all my apps on the system, who handles SMS? And then all the SMS guys will put their hands up. Hopefully, the user has set a default one and you can say, you know, always use this or use this just once. And you can sort of teach your phone that when I say SMS, it means this app. And then it sort of learns that the SMS thing comes in and it goes mm-hmm. out to that app always. And you can reset them and change them around.
Yeah, that seems like a good way to tackle this problem. Because Siri doesn't know how you're going to ask certain questions. So, you train Siri and go, hey, Siri, when I want to know the footy scores, I want AFL Live. Obviously. So that means Siri will, he will know to get the scores from AFL Live. Yeah, that's... If we're going to have artificial intelligence, why shouldn't we be expected to teach our artificial intelligence a little bit? That seems like a fair request.
Yeah.
Actually, it would be good if Apple can release an app like that where we can train Siri. Mm-hmm. Like, we can add shortcuts. If you say, I want to do a claim, it will open the Nib app.
Yeah.
And start the claiming process.
Yeah, that's nice.
You can set the shortcut and your phone will open that particular thing when you say that to Siri. Right?
And the good thing about that is that the user is the one empowered there. So it's not about us developers sitting there trying to figure out every possible combination of words that would
trigger
our app.
That's going to be confusing.
App.
Everyone will do that for all the apps. And Siri will get confused.
So we could offer what we could say as devs is when we create an app, we could say, here are the different ways that you can launch my app or the different data you can get from my app.
Yep.
And we expose that to Siri and then you go into this Siri training app. I hope Apple's listening to this and writing this stuff down.
Also, Apple, call the Siri training app Sirius.
Yes.
Yes. 10 points.
Very good one.
Gryffindor.
So, you go into the Siri training app and you see, oh, look, these are all the ways that I can access the Nib app. So, let me figure out the way that I would most want to launch that. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
Let's implement this, guys. Let's make our own OS.
I always wondered that.
Let's stop the podcast. Let's work on this right now.
Hackathon.
But we don't have that framework open.
Not yet. Let's make one, Aki.
Write our own framework.
I would be able to like say a secret code word and Siri will dial a number, you know?
What's your secret code word?
She's not going to say it.
Respond to that.
Just tell us. There's only like us and Andy in the room. So there's no risk. There's no risk of anybody
will know.
Keith is coming. Run it.
We have to.
Keith is our lovely QA engineer, and I would never run from her, ever.
She'll catch you.
I think if Siri can help, sort of, it'll basically help users. It'll give them more doorways into our app.
Yep.
It'll give them easier ways to launch apps. A similar thing that I think is lacking in iOS and that I'd like to see improved in iOS 8 is app interoperability. So, Facebook recently, they launched App Links, which is they're just trying to make a standardized way that you can deep link. And we should explain the word deep link. Do one of you guys want to explain what we mean by deep linking? I do. I want to explain deep linking. Okay, Kent, you explain deep linking. Deep linking just means that you create a URL, like a web address, but instead of being www.something, it's a special URL just for your app. So, an example, if we make an Outwear app, it might be if you go to Outwear and then put some information after it, that means that the phone knows it should launch the Outwear app and not go to a website.
Yeah.
So, if we use deep linking, that's a way for us to basically call any app on the phone to be launched. And Facebook's tried to sort of put a nice wrapper around this, but I'm wondering if Apple will somehow create a way where apps can interoperate a bit more easily. So, if I'm, working on a photo in the Photos app, there's a really easy way for me to just like pluck it out and keep working on it in some other image editing app. And when I'm done, just like jump back to Photos. Because right now, it's very monotask focused. You choose what app you're going to open and then you have to import all the data there, do all your work and then export it. And it's a lot of manual effort. It's not just kind of this natural flow. What do I want to do? I want to get a photo. So, I'll go to the Photos app and then I want to send that across to this other app. So, I'll just send that across there. It's kind of lacking a bit. Keith, you're an Android user. Is that something that is that how you use an Android device?
Or
it is still monotasking?
It's not really monotasking. Like, we've got that problem solved in Android. But
load it on.
Yeah, what else is there to say? Just buy an Android. Like the whole deep linking and talking between apps and stuff. I'm actually quite surprised to hear iOS doesn't have it. And I'll pick on you later about that. But it's kind of the main use I see of like deep linking, and we call them intents in Android. Mm-hmm. So you create an intent and you say this intent is to intent.
Whoa, let's use an intent.
It's different to out tent. It's okay. Intent.
Got it.
You have to decide. And basically you say this intent is to do this task, and then it's like I was saying before, and then that sort of sends it out to the phone who can do this task. It's the most time I've seen it used in Android is like to share with.
Yeah.
Like you'll be in an app or something and you'll be like share, like going through like a feed reader or something. You're like, oh, this post is funny. I'll send it to my wife. Share. And I've got 8 different ways to send this post.
Yeah. So I mean, iOS has that. That's kind of funny. It's so iOS 6, man. But to me, can you do that flow where let's say you want to get a photo and then you want to edit it in another app and then you want to save it back to your photo library and then you want to email it. What would be your steps? Because on iOS, you would go, I want to get a photo, but because I want to do this thing to it, I better use that app because that's my photo editing app.
Yep.
And then when I'm done, hopefully that photo editing app has an email option and then you're probably fine. But naturally, what I'd want to do as a user is I'd want to go to my photo library, first step, go to my app where all my photos are, choose my photo, and then just like dump that into my photo editing app.
Yeah. I mean, like
Android can facilitate that flow really, really easily already, right?
Yes. But the developers have to have thought of it. Like the photo app person needs to be able to share the photo app and say, here's a picture. Can someone do something with this? Your photo editing app should be clever enough to go, I can do something with this. So it then gets the picture. So you just go share picture with app B and super edit come and grabs your photo, and then you say, okay, you do your edits, etc. So it does its one thing, and then you say,
is super edit your pet project or something?
Super
Why
edit?
Are you spruiking super
I
edit?
Did no reason. In Play Stores now.
Buy super edit. Cross platform.
In about 6 months.
But that the OS has that baked in, basically. And that's what
the OS can facilitate the transfer between the two.
Because if in iOS, in my own custom app, I can make my own sharing sheet. So I can say in my app, I want to be able to send photos to app C, crazy super edit, as it's known.
The direct competitor to super edit.
So if I want to send a photo to crazy super edit from super edit, that's fine because I've written super edit and I've put in facility there to deep link into crazy super edit.
So it's more of like a push type thing.
Well,
it's written from
more
your
about
app.
It, because it's a third party app, you have control over that. Mm-hmm. So it's on the app level.
Yep.
But at the operating system level, if I'm using Apple's photo apps, I can't register with Apple and say, hey, Apple, super edit and crazy super edit, they love photos. Include us in the share list.
Ah, I see.
Because Apple's like, well, no. Who are you, crazy super edit? I'm not putting your logo in my app.
You don't even have an I in front of your name. Rejected.
No, it's C-R-A-Z-I. Crazy super edit.
Crazy.
I can't believe you don't know that.
But they do that already with PDF or text document. Email attachments, something like this. You can open them in Dropbox or
if you're opening a PDF.
Like
But it's really inconsistent, right? Like,
yeah. Maybe they
it's not a problem for you. You're happy.
Well, the paradigm is different on iOS. Is
true.
The apps are sandboxed, and you know that as a dev, you probably don't know that as a user. You don't even know what sandbox means. But you just realize that, you take a photo with the photo app, and then if you want to edit it with a different app, the app will ask, oh, can I have access to your photo library?
Yeah.
That's this annoying message that, oh, can I access your contact? Can I access your location?
As developers, please say yes to everything. We're trying to make an app that helps you. If you don't give us access to your stuff, we can't really help you.
Only to our apps, though, not to everyone else's.
Yeah.
Yeah, because yeah.
Because we're here for good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're good developers.
You can trust us.
We're not going to do anything nasty with you.
We'll see. I have to say, I agree, Jed. I think Apple's pretty happy with the model and a lot of users are happy with it. So, I don't see it changing anytime, but it's on my wish list. So, this is a bit consumer facing, but Anki, what do you reckon about AirDrop from a phone to a Mac? Are we going to see it this year?
I'd love it, actually.
Yeah, we've got it,
I'm
right?
expecting to see it. It's very hard if you want to transfer files between your device and Mac. I don't want to like sync everything to iCloud and then read from
or there. Email.
That's
the
true.
Number of times that I've got, I'm sitting there on my couch, I've got my laptop on my lap, my phone is like 5 centimeters away, sitting on the couch, like, oh, how am I going to get a photo from here to here? I know, I'll email it, you know, to a server somewhere in America so that they can send it to my phone that's sitting 5 centimeters away. AirDrop is the obvious solution, isn't
it? Yeah. Even with just transferring files between Mac to Mac, mm-hmm. I prefer AirDrop if it's like nearby. It's very cool. It gives a nice feeling when you just drag a file into that and mm-hmm. it just goes away.
Yeah.
And it's super fast. And I'd like to see that in iPhone.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, we already have iPhone to iPhone, but that interoperability, fingers crossed. Jet, do you reckon we're going to get more on the wireless front? What do you think of the chances of us getting wireless debugging?
Wireless debugging.
Oh, my goodness. Imagine.
That would be great. That would be great, but I don't know if Xcode and all the dev suite tools are really in their top priority. It doesn't look like because for the
how dare you say that about Apple?
Like you can look at iTunes Connect and the Member Center and Xcode itself.
Yeah.
Well, Xcode 5 is getting a bit better, but still like
let me explain how Apple works, right?
Please explain.
So Apple is a consumer. You know, consumer-facing company. They make consumer tools. And basically, in their opinion, consumers are too stupid to make their own decisions. So, Apple likes to make decisions for you. Apple says, you don't want to choose 10 different configurations. Get the blue one or the red one. How hard is that?
I've got the blue one here
you
on
mean
my
the
desk,
blue peel
actually.
Or the
he
red
chose
peel.
The blue one.
It's
yeah,
pretty.
Yeah. It's that simple. So, from a consumer point of view, they're like, consumers, we're gonna do the thinking for you because obviously you're incapable. But when it comes to developers, Apple's all like, you devs, you're the smartest people on the planet. We're gonna make it so hard for you because we know that you'll overcome anything. If we just give you like, here's a stick and a terminal, now submit your app to the App Store. They know we'll figure it out.
Yeah, and most people don't. there are so many steps, like so many steps to provision your app, to sign it, and to do so many things. I don't even know the whole steps, like the whole process
myself. I agree
myself.
With you. It's very tough.
They and every time, Jet, tough. That's why you're not an iOS team lead, buddy. I just wanted to tell you. That's
cheers,
what's missing.
Cheers.
Kent will remember this.
Do you want to know the big secret? Kent doesn't either.
The question is, who knows? Who knows how to submit an app to the App Store in two easy steps? There's no two easy steps.
There isn't. There
17 isn't easy. Easy steps.
That's
it's very
not
true.
So easy.
So you think the likelihood, given Apple's approach to developer friendliness, they're probably not going to make wireless debugging.
Well, consumers asked for wireless syncing between iTunes and iPhone for like, how many? 3-4 years before they actually made it?
8 years it was.
Yeah. 12 years.
12 years. Since 12
back,
years.
Back
iPhone
in the days, 18 to, years. To like use stones and sticks.
Well, you just had to rub them together until there was a spark. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember those years.
Yeah.
Smoke
I wasn't born. I wasn't born.
The good old days.
But so just syncing your music library between your iPhone and your Mac took like how many years for them to implement it?
Some.
So I think for the developers, I'd rather have them fix iTunes Connect or maybe fix the deployment of the apps. Like they bought TestFlight apparently. So
yeah, they did. I think it's Bursley is the owner of TestFlight, and they bought them. So
Yeah,
it's so true.
Yeah. If they can
Congrats,
improve...
Android, you're out.
Yep.
Sorry, Jet, we're sidetracked. Jet, finish your point and then we'll...
Yeah,
we'll
yeah. Test my point was if they can improve the process, the whole process and the backend first, that'd be great. Then wireless debugging is... I don't think that's so important because when you're debugging, you're next to your computer anyway. So just a cable is...
But Jet... I've been working here at Outwear for over 3 years now.
Wow, and congratulations.
12 years.
The thing that I have found that inevitably happens is no matter how many Lightning and iPod cables we get, within 4 months, every single one of them is gone.
Yep.
I do not know what... I think people are eating them or they're like, oh, I thought it was mine. I thought my work one that I had on my desk at work was my personal one, so I took it home. No accusations. I know. I trust you all right? I'm just saying that somehow in any developer company where you have more than 5 developers, Lightning cables will disappear.
They do disappear.
They do. It's
they do eat them.
Yeah, it's a lore. It always happens. So for me, Outwear would probably cut our operating costs in half if we weren't just getting in a truckload of Lightning cables every day.
But that's less profit for Apple.
Just pay the people.
So they have no incentive in doing wireless debugging because they sell less Lightning cables. Because we are the most consumer. Like we buy so many Lightning cables that it will like lose half of their profit.
We've got to go to the third party Lightning cables that undercut Apple, so it's in their interest.
Cables, just some sort of different brand. I have a theory. Like the Android cables are exactly the same. Like they just go disappear. Missing. Like we get a new batch of phones to start testing on, and it's great because they all come with cables. So that's the best thing about the new phones is more cables. But
we get like a new Galaxy S4, and we just like
throw the phone aside, cable in the box, and we're like, yes. Like I have a theory that there's a crow in this office somewhere that is collecting all the cables, and we're going to find its nest one day, and it's just going to be this like skew of cables that looks like, you know, inside the walls of the Matrix. It's just going to be this crow just go, what?
You need to go check kids' locker, actually.
It's all the locker.
Your crow is collecting everything and putting it there.
Keith's crow.
It's not Keith.
Yeah, by your crow, do you mean an Android dev that just steals Lightning cable just to annoy iOS devs?
My precious. Keith, did you ever notice that Kleptomaniac and Keith both start with a K?
And so does Kent.
Ooh.
Boom.
You've asked of me. Anki, you mentioned test flight. Do you want to talk? What is test flight?
Yes, Anki. What is test flight?
99% of the world knows this by now, but for the 1%,
a test flight is a third party thing that we use for distributing our apps to the clients. So we can upload the binary to the test flight, and we can select who all should be getting this, and we can send it to them. They'll get an email. If they already have the IPA installed, they'll get an update, and they can just directly, by clicking a button, download the app and run it on the device.
And direct your device, which is really cool. So you don't need you don't need to like download it to iTunes and sync your device or anything. You just get an email.
Yeah.
You click download. So everything you said there was correct, except for one thing. You said it's a third-party tool. It's not a third-party tool anymore. It's a first-party tool.
Yeah, sorry.
Or you fail.
So, yeah, as we said before, Apple has bought the company that owns TestFlight.
It's hard for me to believe that, though.
Yeah, it definitely hints. Well, last year we got bots coming out at WWDC. So, that was the idea where Apple is actually building their own continuous integration little server slave buddy dudes into Xcode. So, basically, you set up a... OS X server, and you say when you try to build, you go, hey, OS X server, I want you to run some metrics on my code and check how healthy it is, basically. And instead of you having to sit there on your own machine and do that every time and wait while it does its work, the little bots running on the OS X server, they do that for you and spit the results back. So that was an area that I didn't think Apple would go in. So I've been to WWDC the past 2 years, and 2 years ago in one of the just name
just
dropping
that, yeah, just drop that one down there. I've been the last 2 years.
No, I've been to America. no, so 2 years ago it was really interesting. I was in one of the talks, and one of the Apple engineers mentioned that they use Charles.
Oh,
so this is one of the Apple employees.
The person, just Charles. Hello, I'm Charles.
Context, Charles is a very, very popular third-party continuous integration tool. So basically, we use What am I talking about?
Wait a
Jenkins.
Minute. Jenkins.
I'm getting my bros mixed up.
Like, I was with you until you said continuous integration.
It's been a long week. Okay.
Like, wait, what?
So we have our bros, Charles and Jenkins. Charles helps us out with debugging our networks.
Proxying the web.
Forget about Charles. Jenkins. Jenkins, my good
Charles.
Man. Jenkins takes care of our continuous integration. So Jenkins is our dude that, it could be a dudette. I don't want to be, who knows. Jenkins, our person that takes care of basically compiling our code overnight and doing lots and lots of useful automation steps for us. So basically as devs, we write code, we commit it to Git and boom. Jenkins is away and running all our metrics for us, which is great. So Apple has kind of entered that market, which I didn't see happening because 2 years ago, Apple were like, yay, Jenkins, we use Jenkins. Jenkins is a great tool. And then 1 year later, Apple's Jenkins is great. Shut up.
Jenkins is great. Yeah.
Jenkins is not a great tool.
You are still wrong. It doesn't work.
try compare Jenkins to a stick. Which one is more useful?
compare Jenkins to a piece of paper and a pen. I think I'd get the piece of paper.
No
and
way.
Pen.
You are so far wrong. Anyway, Apple entered that when you know, 2 years ago they were using it. So I would have said that Apple would never enter the continuous integration field because it's kind of it's not the IDE. Like, it's not strictly a required development tool. It's kind of like part of your development environment, like your DevOps. And that's where TestFlight fits in as well. But I think given what Apple did with bots, that they sort of stepped into the continuous integration area themselves, I think it's definite they're going to step into this beta testing sort of area. So do you think this year, like, they acquired TestFlight, I think about in the last six months, it definitely wasn't a year ago. So do you think that's enough time for them to have incorporated into their backend flow and all those things?
Well, I hope so, because that could be a great addition to a more streamlined Xcode experience where you can just in a few clicks just build your binary and just send it to a list of devices or a list of a group of people. Probably there would be a contacts app integration where it reads your contacts and says, "Oh, do you want to
share this out with?"
Yeah, and that would be. I think that's the end goal. If it's not this, WWDC is going to be the next one because obviously they have a lot to gain to have developers quickly and easily deploying beta builds to a lot of users so they can have a lot of updates.
And getting that data back as well. Like, that's the important, like, you don't want someone to test out there in the wild and then not report back. Like,
yeah, there needs to be
that
infrastructure
whole
around
experience,
it.
Yeah. Like end-to-end. Yeah, no, we don't miss TestFlight at all.
Well, the poor Android guys. Yeah, I mean, that's the hint that Apple's going to do something with it. They
very Apple-y.
They stopped Android support like a month after the announcement, I think.
I didn't think they did that just to be mean. Although, it's nice to think that.
What do they call it? They're going nuclear on Android. That's Steve Jobs' famous quote, right?
They were having a holy war at some point. I read something.
When Steve Jobs got very unhappy about the similarities between Android and iOS.
Well, it's the similarities between Samsung and iOS.
In court it is. Okay, let's talk about one more aspect of iOS that I would like to see. And that's that damn blur effect.
Yes.
So
if you're that darn blur effect.
Amen.
Amen, brother. So if you're using your phone, if you're using your iOS device. Sorry, Android users. Find someone sitting next to you because they undoubtedly have an iOS device. Swipe up from the bottom. You'll see Control Center and you'll see that Apple's made this sort of frosted glass blur effect.
Now, I have a question.
Yeah.
I have a 5C in front of me and I've just done what you've said.
And it's not frosted.
Not frosting.
Yeah, that is.
Is it too
frosting.
Warm?
No, that's frosting.
That's a terrible effect. It's not doing anything. It's just kind of fading out.
No, but look what's behind it.
What's behind it?
Well, it's dependent on what is actually behind the frosted glass.
Oh, I see.
It's not just a static image. It's actually an effect.
That's amazing. You guys should put that in all your apps.
Well, yeah. Funny you should say that. So, in all fairness, there is actually a little category, a bit of demo code that Apple released that lets you do this fairly easily. But they didn't publicly add it to the SDK. There was just a dude in the WWDC talk where they were talking about this feature. He went, yeah, so the blur thing is kind of processor intensive. Mm. So we didn't open it up to you but here's a code snippet that does it all for you. So it kind of seems like there might have been a bit of tension between the developers who actually made it and they're happy for it to be out in the world and the actual, you know, people making the call about what goes in the SDK or not, and then saying, yeah, let's not give that to everyone. So I think it's a large part was performance because, you know, iOS 7 is still supporting iPhone 4 and up.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Yep. So I guess the iPhone 4 might sort of struggle with that. Yeah. Why is Keith the one? Come on, guys.
I'll tell you a story. Kent came to me this morning and said, "You have to learn iOS 7 today." So I ran to the drawers and I went to the iOS 7 website and I got a phone with iOS 7 on it. And I haven't done any work today. I mean, sorry, I've done all my work today.
Thank you.
I've just been playing with iOS
7. In all fairness,
it's because next week you're transitioning to an iOS project. Yep. You're going to be an iOS dev starting next week, all right?
So, oh my gosh. Did you not know that?
Oh, no, I actually didn't.
In all fairness, I did only say iOS 7. I let you off for 3 through 6. So, I'd be grateful if I yeah, so I think we might actually see this nice pretty blur. It's the same when if you use FaceTime, it actually like renders the video feed with the blur over the top. And basically, it's just really graphically intensive. You're doing like powerful graphic filters basically, and if you're trying to do that in real time on video, not all devices can handle that. So I think this year, if iOS 8 bumps up the minimum requirements to
iPhone 5,
it's the first of the tall ones in the pictures.
They usually support. Well, last year were they supporting 4 or 4S? 4, yeah,
4.
Yeah, 4, 4S, 5, 5S. They're essentially supporting 4, so you would expect them to just drop the 4.
Yeah.
Maybe stick with
that. That would make sense. It means that iPhone would only have one screen size. So you won't have to have two splash screen images and stuff like this.
That would be very nice.
Yeah.
If the new iPhone gets released and if it's longer, if it has like 4.7 inches.
That is, I do think this is the year. I actually thought last year, so with the introduction of auto layout, where Apple's trying to encourage people to make their designs sort of fit any screen size.
Screens, right?
Yeah. I thought last year we were going to see the iPhone 6 and I thought it was going to be a completely different size. Andy, our producer's just like, what would you know about
us?
Dude, I read the iPhone rumors bit. Actually, it's just Googling stuff. Sorry, Andy. Go about your business. Anyway, I genuinely thought last year we were going to see the iPhone 6 and it was going to be a completely different set of dimensions, and it didn't happen.
It's going to be triangle.
So I reckon.
Oh, amazing. Hexagons.
Listen, Johnny Ive could sell a triangle phone and I would buy it. I got to be honest.
Well, the watch is going to be a circle, isn't it?
Better be.
It's going to ruin everything.
Better be. Any last minute predictions? Let's just go around. Do you think this is yes or no? Do you think Apple's going to release an iWatch? And I know the rumors are saying no, but let's follow your heart. Not what the rumors say. Follow your heart. Do you think at this WWDC they're going to talk about an iWatch?
Jet. I think they may hint about it, like release an app that is about health,
okay,
like the health book, and not mention a watch at all, not mention a device, but just say that, yeah, we're entering this market, blah, blah, blah. You can connect your Fitbit or you can connect your third party. And then 1 year later, like, boom, we have the device. Just forget about Fitbit. Nice. Forget about your whatever other third-party device hardware you have. You just have to buy the iWatch. That would be very Apple.
Nice.
Because I think it's a bit too early for the iWatch. But
Anki, what do you reckon?
I agree to whatever he said. Actually, with the health app rumors, which I have heard, if they could have an iWatch which can sync to like your running and your fitness and everything, and you can see everything in your health app, I think they're going to do it.
So for you, that's a killer app. That's like, that is actually something that could be make a really big impact.
I'm assuming it's going to like record all your activities, like biking, running, walking, and everything, whatever you want.
That's a bit creepy. Record all of your activities.
If you want to, maybe like...
Pooping.
It's funny you mentioned that. I was thinking about something else.
Guys,
anyway,
come on. All your workout, and with the iWatch integration, it will be really great.
Mm.
I'm not sure whether they'll release it this year, but yet.
What do you think, Keith? Do you think if they don't release it this year and the Moto 360 comes out, they've missed the boat?
I don't think they've missed the boat at all. I want them to release it. I want them to bring something out and I want it to be good, because then it's going to make everybody else get off their butts and release something straight away.
Well, to me, the Moto 360 is that, though. I think they're already coming, you know?
That's a very good point, because sometimes and often, like, you have Android developers against iOS developers. I'm happy when a good Android hardware comes out, because it motivates everyone in the industry to make better hardware for the consumer.
And one day, they're going to bring out a good iPhone, and that's going to motivate everyone else. Sorry, I'll let you finish your point. I'm outnumbered. I had to say it.
Fair call. So, you think, you hope yes?
I do hope, yes.
Yeah. I'm putting too much faith in the rumors, and I'm going to say no, but do I want it? Heck yeah.
Speak with your heart. What does your heart say?
I want it, and my fear is where the Moto 360, like kind of the hot Android Wear watch that we've talked about, where that looks like it's many, many things that I want. I'm worried that Apple is going to launch the iWatch, and it's not going to be what I want. It's going to be like, look, we made it really easy, and it doesn't actually do anything, but it's got an Apple logo on it, and it's round.
So where will you be then? You'll be looking, you'll go into a shop, and the iWatch that doesn't do anything but is round and has an Apple logo is next to the Moto 360. What do you do? Which one do you buy?
I'm getting an iWatch.
Sorry?
Yeah. I said I'm getting an iWatch, all right?
But maybe what's going to happen is they're going to like release the Health Book or whatever the name is app and announce the iWatch maybe. But for further release, like I'm not sure.
Coming in 6 months or something.
Yeah, I don't think the hardware is ready yet. They apparently.
Oh, you've been to the factory, or you've been hanging out with.
I was in China 2 days ago in the factory, and the hardware is not ready.
Scoop, great.
But yeah, it would be very Apple to say, yeah, the iWatch will be a new line of product, and the release month will be, let's say, December, because like iPad month is February. Because the first iPad was released in February.
Yeah, and they brought out that new iPad this February, didn't they?
Nope. All right, I got that wrong. All right. But iPhones get released in September. Yeah. Or around September,
more or less. I'll give you that one.
I think I wouldn't buy the first iWatch. It's like the first iPad, the first Apple TV.
It's like best in field, really great hardware, amazing, revolutionary. Yeah, I know what you mean.
But you may have to like buy one and gift it to Kent. It's in his wish list.
I'm sorry for trolling. No, it's
I'm just going to borrow yours.
Yeah, fair play. I'll lend it to you on the weekends.
I'll show you my Moto 360. You guys are like, I bought the wrong one.
I'm sure there'll be plenty of both in the office. That is one thing I can be assured of. If there's one thing we love at Outwear, it's like gadgets.
New things. Shiny.
And actually, Pete Collins, who's been on the show a couple of times, he and I were
Peter
planning.
Collins.
We're planning a WWDC sleepover. So we're actually going to be
telling each other stories.
We're actually going to be having a slumber party at the office, so we can watch the keynote. That is how big a deal this is, at least to he and I.
I have a mental image: you guys just jumping around with pillows,
and Johnny Ive and Tim Cook talking on the phone. Oh my god! Yeah, it's going to be something special.
Prank calls.
I have one final serious request, and this is directed at you, listeners. I'm looking at you. I'm looking right at you as I say this. All right,
listen.
So
up.
You better be looking me in the eye. I'm looking at you.
Stop what you're doing right now. Look at Kent.
Look at me. We're planning to put a little survey in this episode's show notes. So if it's not there, you can blame future me. But present me, we're planning to put a little survey in the show notes. So we've just put a little link in there. It's literally a 30-second survey. So we just want to know what you are enjoying about the Outwear podcast, the OM podcast, and what you'd want to hear most. So, you know, what sort of topics are most interesting to you? You know, we're here for you. We want to inform, we want to entertain, and we want you to enjoy the podcast. So let us know what you think. I promise you, it'll take 30 seconds. Just open your podcasting app, open iTunes, hit that link. I hope you've got 3G right now. If you're in the City Loop Tunnel in Melbourne, you're screwed. Sorry.
Might take 2 minutes.
Hopefully you're not. So thank you. Thank you, dear listener. Now I'm not looking at you anymore, so you can go back to what you were doing. Anki and Jet, thank you for joining us today on the OM Podcast. It was very, very interesting and insightful chatting about Apple. Keith, how do you think you went? This is your first show as a host.
Maybe I should put out a survey and find out. I don't know. My microphone stand says Peter Talbot's mic. So
yeah. You're going to have to earn your own label, buddy.
I've got big warm shoes to fill for this week.
I think you did a great job. So thank you.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. Big thanks to Andy, our producer.
Thank you, Andy.
You've done a great job as always. You'll make us sound
better.
Better. That's the best way to say it. Jet, can you tell people how to follow us on Twitter?
You just type in twitter.com/outwear, or just the Twitter handle is @outwear.
Beautiful. Perfect. Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening. Thanks again.
Ciao.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Au revoir.